ask an atheist listeners.
Evening.
Well, yeah, we're time traveling. I can't tell if it's morning, noon, night.
Maybe we just need coffee.
Wait, what day is it?
I think it's something around Dia de los Muertos, but I don't know because I haven't summoned any dead. More on that later. Dave, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. I'm doing fantastically wonderful, and I want to make it clear I am unavailable next week. I was actually supposed to be on next week, not this week, because I got plans. I got something.
What are your plans, Dave?
MLS Cup is in Seattle. Yay!
This is...
No! Sorry, I had to.
Nick, you have feelings about this.
I don't follow soccer. A lot of my coworkers do. Dave does. It's just, it wasn't something that I was aware of until just a few days ago. So obviously I don't have any plans. I'm not a season ticket holder.
Yeah, I got affordable tickets. That's real nice.
There we go. So, you, I imagine are a little bit, I don't know, peeved, one might say, by any kind of like large event in Seattle, given that you, you know, work in downtown.
Well, what day is it actually happening? Is it
Sunday?
Okay, so I'm not going to be at work in downtown Seattle on Sunday, so it's all good.
All right, excellent. Okay, so in terms of the MLS Cup, this is not the first time that it's been held in Seattle, right?
It is not, although it's the first time the Sounders have played it when it was being held in Seattle, because it was they did a neutral venue, much like the actual Super Bowl. They just pick a venue a couple years in advance, and that's where it's going to be played, regardless who's playing. But MLS, about 8 years ago, decided to move away from that and just have the higher seeded team host. So this is the first time that Seattle will be playing in an MLS Cup. And actually, it's kind of funny because I remember when they did have MLS Cup here, Carol and I went to it because it was a part of our ticket package. We got a chance for, no, it wasn't even that. We just, you know, reasonably priced, and it's kind of a neutral game. Who knows who's going to be there? And I remember the experience being like, this is really like the Super Bowl, just really cheaply.
Oh, okay.
Like,
something's changed with that, though. I heard that tickets on Friday kind of really sold out super quick. And
yeah, tickets for this one sold out super quick, and this is a different thing. But like back then in the neutral one, when the Sounders weren't playing in it, it's like they had live band outside of the stadium during the pregame. It was Third Eye Blind, which is the biggest band of 1997, which I literally walked up and like, hey, Third Eye Blind's playing. I'm like, they're still a thing? Really?
They are still a thing. And I can assure you the Gin Blossoms are still a thing too. I still don't know about Toad the Wet Sprocket though.
I believe they are actually, yes. And then you know how in the NFL games you get that flyover by the Jets? You know, the military jets will do a flyover.
Okay, so we're not actually talking about the team, jets.
No, like actual military fighter jets flying over the stadium.
Right, okay. Yeah,
we got a Coast Guard helicopter.
Okay, not so bad.
So it's just like, it's the same event, just like low-cost version.
Downscaled a little bit.
Well, that and the Coast Guard is... where they are in Seattle is really, really close to the stadium. So it's like, okay, we only have to fly for about 30 seconds to come over here.
And they were just doing their normal exercise. It had nothing to do with the sports event.
Yeah, they didn't even have to, you know, I'm sure they probably just did it on their lunch break.
Depending how fast those fighter jets go, it doesn't have to be a long flight either.
Oh, no.
There's something there. Well, Dave, as our most, I guess, resident sports aficionado.
All right, yeah.
I am going to need your help on this one.
Okay.
Because last month, Chicago Bears kicker Eddie Pinheiro taunted atheists in both social media and a post-game interview after making a game-winning field goal. Pinheiro tweeted, "If you don't believe in God, you better start believing he's real. Thank you, Chicago." And then stated in his interview, "If you don't believe in Jesus Christ, you better start, because he's real, I promise you that." A mere 4 weeks later, Pinheiro had the chance to repeat the feat, but missed a game-winning kick in a matchup against the Los Angeles Chargers. No word on whether the athlete has filed a complaint with the Almighty.
Well, okay, so let's be very clear. If God is actually really involved and has an opinion about kickers, that is absolute sign that God hates the Seahawks, because our kickers are the worst.
Really? You're going to have to bring me through this. I thought last time I checked, Seahawks were like a going concern, like a big thing, right?
Seahawks are a great team, but here's the thing. Like somewhere 3-4 years ago, we had a very good kicker who did a very good job. His name was Steven Hauschka, and he just had a really bad season. And so we replaced him with another guy who had a really bad season. And we replaced him with another guy who had a good season, but he was 42 years old, so he couldn't keep playing. And now we've replaced him with a guy who last year had 97% kick accuracy rate, and he's awful. He's just terrible this year. He missed 3 kicks today. 3 in a single game. Like, this is just... it's a nightmare.
So we're going we're going well beyond what's his name, Blair Walsh territory.
Oh yes, we are well beyond Blair Walsh. I actually put on Facebook, it seems that the kicker position on the Seahawks is the defense against a dark arts teacher.
Oh, okay. You're mixing our Harry Potter. That's way too heathenous for I guess Eddie Pinheiro, right?
Right. And here's the thing.
Maybe
about
we should tweet back at him. You better start believing that Dolores Umbridge is real. I promise you that.
Now, and the thing about, you know, there's athletes in the, you know, I think we've spoken on the show in great lengths about the sort of culture of Christians taking over sports, particularly in like the high school level. And we did the story about Coach Kennedy in Bremerton who wanted to pray with the students and acted like he was persecuted because it's like, hey, you're a public school teacher at a public school. Don't pray with the students on the field because...
yeah, it looks like an endorsement of religion from the school district.
You know, it's a constitutional thing, you know, just a little law that's like the founding basis of our country. But like there is a big push to bring, like a lot of coaches are very evangelical and there's a whole lot of Jesus in sports. And it drives me crazy because it's like if I were to believe that God were a real being who cared about what happened on earth, I couldn't imagine a single thing he would care less about than sports. Like, the whole point of sports is you have conflict without any bad outcomes. Like, okay, so your team loses and you feel bad, but the players are still making money. Nobody's really been hurt. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
So you subscribe to the, like, a football is a way to sublimate our bellicose urges into something that's entertaining and productive.
Yeah, I would not necessarily, I would argue the point that we have bellicose urges, rather we build those into ourselves. I think that's more of a philosophical argument to make. But honestly, like, I think sports is a great place to express ideas like competition and conflict and everything in a more or less safe way. I mean, admittedly, there is, you know, there's problems with injuries and, of course, football with concussions. Like, there are definitely some bad outcomes. But, like, sports in general, the concept of sports, I'd rather watch a game than watch, like, an actual real fight or a war.
Okay. All right. I dig it there. I mean, there of all the things that could be ahead of sports outcomes on your to-do list, on your intervention list, like if I were an almighty being, I think I might start with, like, I don't know, the starvation, yeah, the kids with cancer, the, you know, just people being taken advantage of. I mean, maybe actually move people's hearts in certain ways for benevolent outcomes for all.
Right.
And, you know, all that humanist stuff.
And of course, since none of that's working out, there's good evidence to me that there isn't anybody up there watching. But that's just me. So
it's kind of like how most people, I imagine, don't really look at the ants and on the ground and like think about what they are doing and how we can affect them. It's just kind of there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty much like if I were to change the entire world to fix something, the outcomes of sports would not be it.
There are many, many bigger things to deal with, like, oh, whether people have safety and food and water.
Yeah.
Or are personally fulfilled and have agency and, you know, can participate in common humanity and activities and whether our earth is being destroyed.
I was going to say, or our planet is on fire. And
but no. God cares more about Eddie Pinheiro's, you know, kicking through the uprights than anything else.
Well, this puts to question, puts to bear the... maybe God has like a rotation and there were multiple matches going on that day. And so he was distracted elsewhere and helping someone else's field goal kick. Or is that a thing in football? Am I get the right term there?
Yeah, okay. Field goal kicks football. Yeah.
I mean, maybe he was, I don't know, watching the New York Philharmonic and making sure that the concertmaster's, you know, E string on the violin didn't twang and break apart. I mean,
and here, if you want other sports, maybe God really cared about baseball fans being miserable because none of the home teams won in the entire World Series. He knew somebody had to win the World Series, but that doesn't mean a single home fan could watch a single winning match.
So. Oh, yeah, that was a fun kind of volley back and forth of, you know, yeah, you're always losing regardless.
Has that ever happened in not just baseball, but like any other sports?
It literally just happened with the Astros and Nats, and is the first time in sports, like, they, you don't really count football because it's just one game, but like, and I don't think you count soccer because it's kind of a different system, but when you look at NBA, NHL, and MLB, like all
anything
the sports
that
has
competitions where you go back and forth between the
home. Where you have playoff series, multiple game series, it's never happened before that the home team lost every single game in a series.
It was bound to happen eventually, though.
True.
It must have been magic. This must mean something, right?
I can't explain it, therefore God.
Well, we do have a question about if Jesus was real, and this comes from Evil Eye Monster, who tweets at us. Okay, even if Jesus was real, wouldn't walking on water be easy if you knew where the sandbars were? Gentlemen?
Then you'd be walking on a sandbar, not walking on water. I feel like if you're going to make the argument, then I think ice is a perfect argument for walking on water.
Oh, yeah, we didn't specify its phase state, right? I mean, yeah. I think if it's in vapor form, that would cause a lot of injury. But.
Yeah. If you try walking on water, yeah, you can do that with some floaty shoes and a lot of really good balance. Try walking on steam.
I think this might be a callback to when we looked at the novelty art piece that was a pair of really high-end shoes that were then injected with holy water so that you could, you know, you could walk on water. And is it
like 70s platforms with a goldfish in them?
A little bit like that, except they're sports shoes. So that cushion of air where you have that little plastic see-through part where air is, just inject a supposed holy water, alleged holy water from Jordan.
I like this plan. This is quantifiable data. If you take these shoes and shoot the exact same model of shoes, just don't inject the holy water and give them to two athletes who have similar, like, capabilities, and see over time if the one with the holy water outpaces the other one. Like, you could do a double blind on this. You could get a control group. You could, like, I think there's some real possible science here.
Are you trying to put science in their religion? How dare you?
Well, Evil Eye Monster actually says, you know, if you knew where the sandbars were, no big deal. Peter missed, but fishermen should be able to swim.
You're not supposed to think about that.
Now, you guys were raised in sort of a vaguely Christian context. Can you explain what he's talking about with fishermen and Peter and stuff like that? I know that there's, like, Jesus fish, and Jesus, what, made fish appear and fed people with fish? And
There is the feeding an entire crowd with two fishes or a fish and two loaves of bread, or is it two fishes and a loaf? Bread.
Oh, math. The Bible doesn't concern like itself with correct math.
I grew up in an incredibly progressive church. We didn't talk about stuff like that, so I don't know.
Here's my sort of quick take on whenever I read these miracles, like, I feel like it's a real great example of the context in which the Bible was written. The miraculous things in the Bible are things that would only really be miraculous to a Bronze Age peasant, like walking on water and feeding a lot of people with just a single loaf of bread and a fish. Like, you know, there's not like superpowers, okay? Like, you don't get like comic book hero type miracles in the Bible because they don't think in those contexts, those terms. They think of things that would be miraculous to them.
Oh, you get superhero powers and all kinds of stuff in the Hebrew scriptures where you've got like pillars of fire and transmogrifying people into different substances and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. You make things appear from nothing. That's pretty damn smart and things like that. But I am just wondering what a Bible written by sports athlete heroes today might look like. And hey, if we didn't have the actual war, the people that are like in the context of actual conflict and armed conflict and war right now, and it was just written by sports heroes, would we have a less violent scripture than what we are left with at this moment?
Considering some of the things that sports fans will say to other sports fans from rival teams, I'm not exactly sure it would be nonviolent.
Yeah, you know, now that I think about it, I did grow up as a Red Sox rooting Bostonian, and some of those Yankees rivalry games, they got pretty nasty. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, with me, Becky Friedman, and Nick and Dave. You can give us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. We've got some more skeptical things coming up after the break. Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I think we're in a little sugar high punchy mood today. Maybe left over from some holiday that happened midweek that we were all running up to. Nick, did you celebrate Halloween?
I do have a lot of candy at my house.
That's celebratory.
I guess, but I didn't have any trick-or-treaters, so.
We got two trick-or-treaters, and only because I put out a call in our neighborhood group of being like, hey, anyone still up? Because I'll be up till 9. I still got candy. If your kids are all washed up for bed, that's okay. Have them come by in their jammies.
Though I also literally just moved into a new apartment, so I didn't have any decorations up. I'm not really one for decorating anyway, but I have a feeling that people were probably bypassing my apartment.
Okay, all right. And Dave, how about you? Did you have a happy Halloween?
I did. I actually went up to my sister's house and sort of hung out with my mother who was visiting, and we manned the house and the trick-or-treaters and gave out the candy. Well, my sister and brother-in-law took our niece and nephew out around the neighborhood. So
okay, real fun.
Yeah. And so
now, did you dress up in order to greet trick-or-treaters?
I did not, and I had an idea for a costume that I will hold on for next year because I think it's going to be really good. So I'm going to keep a lid on it. I had an idea, but no, I ended up going lazy this year.
Well, my lazy costume was my Ninja Turtle hoodie. I don't actually know if it's officially licensed, but it generally is a hoodie that has a half mask and it has orange markings on it and some cartoon painted on, nunchucks or something like that. And as a school teacher, we get into the spirit of things and it's really fun. And, you know, we just, you know, have fun with the kids and just lower their affective filter a little bit and. I had the very strange experience of a few people not recognizing like what it was from. Some people just kind of like, yeah, all right. And then one very well-meaning but confused colleague who saw me in the staff room and said, it's a Mighty Morphin Turtle Fighter. And I don't know what to do at that particular moment. Do I correct her?
Say, did you ever have a childhood?
Yeah, I didn't want to make her feel bad because maybe she didn't actually have a childhood.
Yeah, and,
so, and you know, so I just said, yeah, it's something like that. Yeah, yeah.
That definitely goes beyond the what the English called the mutant.
The franchise?
Yeah, they called them Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles because of ninja weapon panic.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Ninja was too violent of a word for the higher ups in the BBC or whichever.
But I really think that there is some potential for Mighty Morphin Turtle Fighters. I want that franchise to be a thing. Please, someone who has the ability, make me happy.
Yeah, Mecha's in a half shell. So we actually have an inquiry from Meg from Bremerton who says, did any of you go out and buy the leftover Halloween candy at 50%?
I did not. I usually do that, but I've been busy and I just haven't gotten to the grocery store. So, and of course, you know, the moment it's like 6 hours after Halloween is over, it's like, well, all the good stuff's gone by now, so.
I didn't because I still have a ton of candy that I have an unopened bag. Please come over to my apartment and help me eat some Snickers bars.
Well, don't get Snickers bars. That's your problem.
Well, guys, we don't have a problem with candy because you know what? I have a special treat for us tonight. I actually was... I was overseas. Actually, I was not overseas. I was over land, over hills. I was in Canada for this past weekend for some professional development and touching base with some family. And I had the good fortune to walk into one of the cheapo dollar type stores. And there was some Canadian Halloween candy that was there on 50% off.
Oh.
I got to ask, do you prefer, let's see, green apple or pomme verte Let's see, strawberry fraise or framboise bleu, blue raspberry. Dave, take your pick.
I will go with the strawberry.
Okay, so strawberry candy, and Nick?
Whichever one is in your right hand.
Okay, you've got the blue raspberry. So what we have in front of us here, there were three. They've got some cartoon characters on them. I've got the green apple, and thanks for nothing, guys.
I'll trade.
The green apple ghost. Okay, all right, well, there we go. Okay, now I have the strawberry kitty cat again. The true Halloween cat with, you know, yellow eyes and a black silhouette. These are Avec Suquette or Sucette, which, as the only one who studied French in here, Nick, I believe that would mean with sucker.
I'm guessing so. I took 4 years of French in high school, but I forgot most of it. So
I was really happy to see all this bilingual stuff. I'm coming back from Canada and I'm listening to the radio and there's so much bilingual radio programming. It's amazing. I'm hearing Punjabi. I'm hearing Spanish. I'm hearing a ton of French. I'm hearing Korean. I'm hearing Chinese. It's really cool. And so we have our French labeled candies. These are not just any candies. These are popping candies. Bonbon petit long.
So they're pop rocks.
Shh. No, they are Halloween popping candies, Dave. So I think we'll sample the Halloween popping candies. Mine has a big starry thumbs up, it looks like. So I'm going to open mine a little bit. And oh, and it actually is a pink thumbs up.
Oh.
It's a thumbs up. So what are your shapes, guys?
Mine looks like the same thing.
It's a big shiny thumbs up. So our Canadian listeners, please tell us about whether Halloween popping candy is something that is
Pop Rocks.
Is the only thing that's like left over, or is this a legitimate thing? And I guess it looks like you cannot partake in this candy if you are between 0 and 3 years old.
Sorry, Les Pop Rocks.
Do you want to get sued?
Les Rocks Petillantes or something like that. So, Nick, what about you? Do you have a thumbs up?
I do. It looks like all three of ours are pretty much the same shape and color.
Wait, why are they all the same color? When I was expecting mine to be pink with the fraise, with the strawberry, but...
Well, the actual Pop Rocks are green.
A popping candy! All right, ready? Ready? Shall we lick our lollipops and then dip it in our bonbon petit long? Okay, ready?
Comment dit-on, let's go for this en français.
I don't know. We'll have to have our Canadian listeners email us at atheist.radio. Let's see.
Yep, they're Pop Rocks.
Can you hear the popping candies?
Do I got Diet Coke anywhere?
Speaking of myths and mythos, so yes, they do seem to satisfy the definition of candy. And
I don't think they're bad.
No,
it's just not something I really, really go for.
Okay, well, Canadian listeners, I know that you're there, and so please do tell us about what your favorite Halloween candies are. And hey, U.S. listeners or anyone, email us at questions@atheist.radio.
Okay, let me throw this out to you guys, because I need to get a second opinion on this. I was listening to a show, and I can't remember which one, so I won't even throw them under the bus, but they were talking about candies and everything, and they were basically talking about, like, the worst American candy, and they mentioned Milky Way. They're like, this is like the most generic, it's made of nougat, it's stupid, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, for one, I love Milky Way. And two, like, is that really like a bad candy? Like a generically bad? Like,
I don't think so. I could think of a million different things that are, you know, chocolate bar related that are far worse.
Yeah.
I think the worst candy, excuse me, I still have bonbon petit long in my mouth, but... The worst candy are those like peanut butter taffy things that are, Sam calls them mung. I think that's the term.
Are they
that
named after Mungo?
I don't know. Mung, no, like mung beans or something. But they're, okay, so they've got wax paper wrappers that are either orange or black, and they only seem to be out on Halloween, and they're like these peanut butter taffies.
Hmm. I'm not sure I've ever had those.
I don't think I've even heard of them.
See, I think when I think bad candy, I think of things like Necco wafers.
No, Neccos are amazing. They can be used as currency in like third grade, right? They are like little coins. You can count them off like quarters. You can gamble with them.
They're like Smarties without the taste.
So now we know which one of us grew up in New England.
true. It's a true thing.
Yeah, but I also like my fair share of old people candy. Like, I love Chico Sticks.
I mean, I like candy corn, so.
Yeah, I think they're fine. I still have never had Circus Peanuts, though.
Oh, Circus Peanuts are bad.
Yeah, those, they're just weird. They look, they taste exactly like they look like they would taste. Like, you look at those and like, imagine biting into one. That's exactly what
like
they taste like.
Like a stale marshmallow?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I'd still like to try it one of these days.
Well, we do have another inquiry, and it wasn't actually directly to us, and it does peripherally have to do with Halloween. This actually came by my eyes, in front of my eyes, through a discussion group that I'm a part of teachers, and it's from folks all over the country. And I will summarize in general. Alan from the internet writes, a fellow teacher sent out an all-staff email inviting us to the staff room for prayer, reflection, coffee, and donuts before the start of the school day on October 31st. The message stated, we all need some extra prayer this time of the year. I am very offended by this. It is religious. I do not know this teacher well and want to remain anonymous. If I make contact with the admin or the teacher about this, there's a name and a face to the complaint, and I could be on the radar, and my life at school could be made a living hell. Any ideas on what to do? Dave, I'll go to you first.
Okay.
What would you advise Alan to do?
With caveats that, of course, I don't know the entire system of the school system you're working at, and I don't know how things technically work there or anything. Like, I don't know if there is a sort of anonymous complaint method, like a way you can like turn in an anonymous complaint to administration and say, look, I feel like this needs to be addressed, but I'm worried about blowback. Like, you know, kind of, I don't want to say a whistleblower complaint for this, because I don't think it reaches that level of like egregiousness. But
you've been in companies, and many of them have things like ombudsman, right? Is that kind of what you're talking about? Like someone to handle sort of HR complaints?
Yeah, an HR department is exactly the type of thing where you can just quietly, it's like, look, I don't want my name on this. I don't want people knowing this about me. You know, I've kind of kept this under wraps, but this bothers me, and I don't think that she should be using our work email to proselytize. Like, I think that that's a problem. I don't know if you don't feel like you can do that. Like, if there's no place where a complaint like that can be handled anonymously, then honestly, I don't know what you can do. I also feel like there's a slight twist to this in that when it comes to religion in schools, like, we are very strong when it comes to, we would rather have no expression of religion in school by any of the staff, because any expression by the staff can come off as endorsement, and that's a problem. But I feel like there's a slight tinge of like, these emails are not being sent to students. This is not a prayer meeting that was put together for students. This is for the staff itself. And so I'm like, honestly, just don't go. Like, this is not like, this is not coercion. And I can see how it can make you uncomfortable, but like, to some level, a part of a pluralistic society is accepting the fact like there are people who are going to put together meetings that you're not going to like and might be at work, and you just kind of got to live with that. And, you know, that's just kind of the way it is. So I would actually, my guess is probably don't do anything. Like, just don't go and swallow your pride on this one.
Nick, what about you?
I think I agree with you, Dave. If this was only a one-time thing, if this keeps on going on, though, this to me sounds like the camel sticking his nose under the tent. And that's where I would have a problem with it. Because, you know, of course, it's okay for one time, but why can't we do it next week? You allowed it last week. I really don't like slippery slope arguments, but I find myself making a lot of them these days, and I don't like that.
Well, I'll tell you some of the ways that that I kind of thought of Alan's situation here, and answer some of those little wonderings. In most circumstances, when you're not in front of children, and it's not during like a school prep time, like when you're contracted to be working, folks are allowed to pray at school when they're not, you know, encouraging students to do so. So if you go into the staff room and you want to say grace before your meal, like that's one's right. If you are a Muslim teacher and you excuse yourself, you know, in between your class periods to, you know, do your prayer towards Mecca, like that's within the rights of public school teachers. For me, it's officially, you know, sanctioned within, you know, staff rooms and things like that, because it's not in front of students. The part that I think can be, that case can be made, is the use of the staff email, because there's almost always policies that prohibit you from using your work resources for personal things.
Right.
So there are some things that go on at my site, like there's a group of teachers that get together before school, and they use the gym for futsal, right? They get there and they wrap up at 6:45, so they play 6 to 6:45. They have time to dress and then greet students at 7:15. Mm. And that's a personal, you know, thing that they do. And it would be on par with things like, you know, let's meet in the staff room for coffee, donuts, and prayer circle. There's people that say, hey, anyone want to come to, you know, the local establishment at 4 p.m. this afternoon for happy hour? And that's a part of teachers' private lives. And so on one big hand, I'm inclined to say good on this particular teacher for seeking out camaraderie and things like that. On the other hand, what was something that really took me aback is that a lot of the discussion centered on stop being so offended, stop being such a baby. This is PC culture gone awry. These are people. What is it to you if she's, you know, wanting to pray? You don't even have to pray. Now, in a place like the Pacific Northwest, you know, in Metro Seattle, maybe it's not so common and it's very diverse and pluralistic. But we know very, very specifically, I mean, there's someone within the atheist movement who has a whole blog that details exactly the ways in which his atheism being revealed to his school district employers was a vehicle to push him out, was a vehicle for parents of his students to say, I must have my child placed into a different class with a different teacher because I don't want an atheist teaching them. And those are the kinds of things that maybe some folks aren't aware that still happen.
Right.
And you don't even have to go far outside of Seattle to do that. Like, I mean, Coach Kennedy was just as the crow flies just a few miles away from Seattle in Bremerton.
Yeah. And I think what this is actually a really excellent sort of expression of is religious privilege in a workplace, where a teacher can write an email saying, hey, we're going to have a prayer meeting, and like make the assumption that most people are A-okay with that prayer meeting or want to take part. And it would never occur to the person who sent that email that there is somebody who's an atheist who is afraid to challenge, because even letting that be known could have serious effects on their career. Like, it would never, I'm willing to bet the person who sent this email did it completely innocently and would never even think about the issues surrounding what that kind of request would mean like for somebody who did not believe the same things that they did.
I'm not so confident as you that this was something that was sent out innocently. When you say, hey, we could all use some prayer around this time of year. What time of year is it? Specifically October 31st? Specifically Halloween, which is for all intents and purposes a very cultural holiday and has very little religious significance for the folks that actually observe Halloween and participate in Halloween. Certainly has religious implications for individuals who are highly evangelical and believe it to have connections with the devil. Certainly has religious implications for Jehovah's Witnesses that do not celebrate general holidays. But to link that and say, oh, and this is the first time I'm going to do my prayer meeting because I don't know, it's a random Thursday morning. That to me has these little sort of, you know, whistles. I've got these little bells ringing where I'm saying, is she someone that is specifically of the bent that Halloween is demonic and we need to counter the cultural secular observances of Halloween by upping Jesus's profile? And there were folks that said, hey, what does it matter? It says prayer and reflection. Why don't you just go to it? Prayer's for everyone. Well, prayer's not for everyone. And different forms of people who do pray are really vastly different, right? You say, So not just of someone not thinking of the implications for an atheist who doesn't want to out themselves to their colleagues or to their students or to the families of their students, But to someone who is of a minority religion, to someone who is that would pray differently, what kind of experience would they have in showing up for coffee and donuts and having a prayer circle where everyone is reading from, you know, New Testament scripture? For someone who is not a Christian, would that be equally inclusive? Now, many different ways can be, many different invitations can be stated that can sound ecumenical and all-inclusive. And to me, I've seen them. They don't sound like this. It's, we invite people of all faiths and creeds to join with us in honoring and remembering this particular person. You know, if it's a vigil, we invite all people, everyone's welcome to share of their particular cultures in order to come together in solidarity. Those are the kinds of watchwords that you use and that you say when you have an inclusive and pluralistic prayer event. When you say, oh, on Halloween, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you know what I mean? On this day in particular, we need to pray it up.
Right. Well, and what I'm saying is, this isn't someone who has thought even far enough to imagine that there could be a multi-denominational prayer circle. This is a person that just assumes everyone around them is the same as they are and sees Halloween as a reason that we need to get together and pray. And it would never occur to her that it's like, there are members of my staff who actually might be really uncomfortable with this.
And there are lots of parts of the country that, well, a typical question isn't, do you go to church or what religion are you? It's, which church do you go to? Because, like, oh, I listen to both kinds of music, country and Western.
So says the guy honoring Toad and the Wet Sprocket.
Well, hey, I like Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Well, this is the time of year where we start running into a lot of different high-profile holiday observances, not just Halloween. And for that, I'm going to bring us to Kentucky, guys. You ready?
Do we
where
have
I think
to?
They do play Kentucky and Western. And bluegrass! No, but anyway, in Henderson, Kentucky, let's see. A city commissioner of Henderson, Kentucky objected to her municipality's involvement in its Dia de los Muertos celebration that was taking place this past Saturday in the city's Central Park because she feared the danger of someone trying to summon the dead. Dia de los Muertos is a Hispanic cultural celebration that is most distinctively celebrated in Mexico's Oaxaca state, but also in various Spanish-speaking countries, where celebrants honor their ancestors and departed loved ones with a variety of rituals and decor that stem from both Catholic and indigenous traditions. While organizers aimed to promote inclusion and acceptance for the country's growing Hispanic community, Commissioner Patty Bug stated that she and many of her friends opposed the observance because of supposed biblical prohibitions against seances and Ouija boards. Dia de los Muertos celebrations typically make no use of Ouija boards nor proscribe seances.
Well, you know, I understand where she's coming from because
what?
Like, no,
Dave, out!
No, I totally do because just the other day I actually watched this terrifying documentary. It's called Coco.
Oh, I think I saw that!
Look, this is absurd. Like, one of the things that drives me nuts about this story is when you read the article, she keeps trying to say, look, I have respect for these people and I have respect for their culture and everything. I just think they're trying to summon demons. Like, no, you don't have respect for them. Stop trying to say that. Like, you have made no effort to understand what the meaning of this is, what the context of it is, what the history of it is. You just got a little scared because people are expressing a religious feeling differently than you do, and now you want to like publicly state how you're afraid of it as a city commissioner, which means from your political office, which is even worse. Like, there are so many levels of wrong to this woman.
Nick, any thoughts?
I'm just wondering how many times she's seen one of these celebrations and actually seen the streets overcome with zombies. It doesn't happen. Like, and the fact that you have to explain this kind of thing to people like this, I don't have the time. I don't have the crayons.
So one of the things I want to like push back on or explore a little bit is, you know, Dave, you actually said this is someone expressing religious feelings differently from you. And should a city be holding a festival that has explicit religious origins? Or should it stay separate from that? Or is something like Dia de los Muertos cultural enough to say this is an exploration and celebration of a cultural event?
Well, there's a line that it's a subtle yet important line that we've covered before, and that is an organization putting this separate non-governmental organization putting the celebration on public land, like applied for a permit from the city to do this meeting in the park, or is it the actual city itself doing it? Because if it's the city itself doing it, yeah, I have a problem with that, because this is an explicitly religious ceremony. But if it's just an organization like the public using public land with permits and the city approves those permits, no, I have no problem with it whatsoever.
I'm kind of in sort of a confused spot myself, because having participated in the teaching about Dia de los Muertos and existing adjacent to many families and individuals who celebrate this, and then learning about it in many different myriad ways, I can see the immense cultural significance of it for even individuals who are non-theistic, don't engage in ancestor worship. In the Facebook discussion group for the Latino Secular Alliance, there's lots of folks who are explicitly atheist or secular that say, yeah, I set up an altar for Dia de los Muertos. I set up my ofrenda. I have my grandma, my abuelita's picture up there. I put out the Coca-Cola and the tequila bottle. And, we play music for that night. And it's a really nice way to come together. In what I imagine to be kind of a similar way to how many American atheists will say, yeah, I celebrate Christmas. We have a turkey. We trim a tree. I don't believe in God and Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an opportunity to have a fun celebration.
And it's actually, I one of the things I find fascinating about Dia de los Muertos is that it's something that we in America don't do very well, which is find a celebratory way to remember those who've died. Like, usually it's a very solemn, very grieving event, but that's not what this is. This is a chance to get together and remember in happiness. Okay, I'm going to throw this out there because this is just kind of a silly thing for me, but my wife has specific instructions for what the memorial service is supposed to look like when I die. And I took my inspiration from an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. There was an episode when they thought that Geordi had died, as well as Ensign Ro, but hardly anybody remembers who Ensign Ro is. Turns out they were phased. It's a Star Trek thing.
She's like, they're in like an alternate, they're like shifted. They can see everyone, right?
Right.
None of the crew can see them, right?
Right. But one of the plot lines of that episode was Data was trying to figure out how to have a proper memorial for Geordi. And so he's asking all the crew members who are telling them their own cultural, like, when someone dies in my culture, we remember him like this, we do that and everything. And what Data ends up doing is throwing a party. And he's like, I just thought everyone wants to get together and share stories. So let's do the things we do when we get together and share stories. Let's have food. Let's have music and everything. And so there's this giant party and everyone's having a blast and they are telling memories. And, you know, it's sad, but it's also kind of happy at the same time. And it's a celebration. And I'm like, I want that to be my memorial. I want you to use whatever life insurance payout, pay for an open bar, pay for a ska band, pay for, you know, like a chance for everyone to get together and talk about how awesome I am, because that's what I deserve. I don't need people crying over me for hours. I want people laughing about me. And I think that attitude, which is honestly kind of foreign to American ideas, is exactly the attitude of Dia de los Muertos, is that you get together and you celebrate and you have a good time and you tell good memories. And I think that's an amazing aspect of that holiday that I think we could adopt in some way, but that doesn't change the fact that it's still kind of a religious holiday. Like, it comes from Catholic as well as Native ceremonies and traditions. So it's like, it is in its basis. Yeah, Christmas is kind of secular, but in its basis it is religious, but like, this seems more, I don't know. I could be off base here, but to me it feels more. It's harder to secularize that.
Though, while there are Christmas celebrations in churches, would there be a Dia de los Muertos celebration in a church?
Well, it's in most observances of it, is not actually something that happens at the church, but happens at the grave, at the grave sites. And that's where you go, you clean the graves, you decorate them with the traditionally marigold flowers, you enjoy the traditional foods that, you know, they would have enjoyed as well. So it is that connection. And it wouldn't happen within a church, but of course many grave sites and many tombs are adjacent or associated with with religious institutions. So I think that one of the things you're hitting on, Dave, is that as individuals who are not religious, we have the freedom in a big sense to determine what those kind of big life events look like and how to make them meaningful. We've talked a lot about what it looks like to have wedding celebrations and unions between two people when you don't believe that, you know, God is uniting you, or you're not making a promise to God, you're making a promise to the person that you're choosing to be with. We have talked about what it looks like, when we don't think there's an afterlife. We think this is our only life, so let's make the most of it and be the best we can. But then the freedom to determine what we want to do, what those traditions are, whether we want to keep them, whether we want to add on them, I think is a beautiful aspect of being an atheist, being a humanist, being someone who isn't beholden to any kind of those religious strictures that might not be meaningful for you, is something that's super awesome. We'll be back after the break with maybe another comment or question about demonic, satanic things. You're listening to Ask an Atheist. Welcome back to the spooky post-Halloween episode of Ask an Atheist. We're not spooky at all. We didn't go trick-or-treating. We have too much leftover candy.
I don't have enough leftover candy.
Oh, give all of your leftover candy to Dave of Ask an Atheist.
Except for the Snickers.
You're not taking my almond joys. I don't care about the Snickers, but you're not taking my almond joys.
Anything with the nuts you can keep.
Gladly.
It's fitting. So I did tease that we were going to talk about a little bit more of our demonic and satanic things, and really not demonic. We're going to shift fully to Satan, because officials at the U.S. Naval Academy have granted a request by a group of midshipmen to provide a room on campus for the Satanic Temple to gather and hold services. Commander Alana Garas verified that the group's request was granted despite lacking approval from the Academy's command chaplain, as is typically required for religious groups. The Satanic Temple describes itself as a non-theistic religion dedicated to rejecting tyrannical authority and encouraging benevolence and empathy among all people. Ooh, Dave, you've been with us on the show a while. How often have we talked about non-theistic and atheist service members to just have the right to be recognized?
Oh, man, it's been a constant fight, like it's a constant argument of like, I remember a story about a service member that ended up he had to go to church services because the other option was chores. Like they would make him clean the bunks if he wasn't in church. And it's like, how is that fair? Like, how can I not just have like an hour to myself while everyone's at church? And so he ended up having to go to church just not to do work.
And at this time, I think it's even more, I think, relevant and current when we look at our most recent demographics of our service members. You know, there's that super popular saying, there is no atheist in foxholes, right?
Go check with the atheistinfoxholes.org, I believe.
They don't exist.
Since even beginning the show nearly 10 years ago, our demographics within our military divisions have really changed, where we have nearly a third of all service members of active duty that are either explicitly atheist or humanist, or expressing no particular preference, or leaving it blank so their religious preference is unknown.
Nuns.
That's a huge demographic. That's one third. And yet the majority of our military chaplains are evangelical Protestant. And yet the the Congress can't seem to see a reason for designating humanists as legitimate chaplains to be able to serve the, you know, the emotional and spiritual needs of service members of up to one third of young people serving in the military.
Right. And there were, I do remember, like, sort of the ramifications of having this sort of breakdown of where, like, if you're a non-religious service member and you only have access to an evangelical preacher or a sort of secular therapist who actually can report stuff, like, you only get confidentiality? You only get confidentiality with the pastor. But if you don't feel comfortable going to that pastor, then you have to go to, if you have some an issue that you need to deal with, something you need to get off your chest, you're going to somebody who does not necessarily have to hold to that confidentiality. So that's like a clear imbalance. But it's like, I can't go, if I have this like Southern Baptist old school preacher guy as my local commanding
chaplain,
I can't go to him to talk about my issues with atheism. Like, I just can't do it. There, I'm not going to get a proper hearing for that. So
I think one of the important things to look here is that we've got the Satanic Temple, and the Satanic Temple has been so incredibly effective at advocating for the rights of non-theistic individuals because they are defined as a non-theistic religion. Mm-hmm. And so once you grant privileges and rights to religious groups, to distinct religious groups, Satanic Temple's in there and saying, yep, us too. And it provides an ingress for those atheists and humanists to say, I'll affiliate with the Satanic Temple if it means that I'm treated just as fairly as my religious service members, if it means that I am granted the right to study my particular philosophies and religions in the similar way to the evangelical Protestant individuals that are serving on the boat or on the carrier or on the base with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's super important.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, but I am amazed at how just within the past like 5 or 6 years, how much steam they've picked up and how quickly they can do these things. And I really can't say enough good things about it right now. This is awesome.
Yeah, the Satanic Temple, they get stuff done. Like, one of the problems with having an atheistic viewpoint is, like, there is a marked difference between religious and non-religious. And so all of religious people can say, well, we all have something in common and you don't count because of that. But the Satanic Temple is the perfect mirror of holding up, you want this, we get it too. You want this, we get to go there too. You want to carve out this space for yourself, we have to be included in that.
Well, speaking of being included in whatever you wanted, I'm going to take us all the way to Indonesia, guys. You ready?
Oh.
Where an Indonesian man who lobbied for caning as a punishment for adultery in Aceh province has been publicly caned for adultery. Mukhlis bin Muhammad was beat 28 times for his dalliance with a woman in a beachside parked car. The unnamed woman he had his affair with was struck 23 times. Aceh province aligns its laws with Sharia, outlawing same-sex relations, alcohol consumption and production, and gambling. So, guys, there's something really rich in the beautiful irony and sort of bookending of this, right? Because, oh, yeah, I think that adultery is terrible and we should punish anyone by caning. Yes, we'll take a rattan stick and beat your bum with it, right? Publicly, in order to deter everyone. Oh, yeah. Yeah, really? Is this good enough for the goose? Then I guess it's really good enough for the goose.
Yeah, it's I have trouble because I kind of want to laugh at this and, you know, ironic justice and poetic justice, if you will. There, you know,
but there's a big but, isn't there?
But the problem is, like, I don't, even for this guy, like, I don't want to laugh or condone a person getting caned. Like, I just don't. Like, even however much it's ironic that you were the one who set these laws up, you know, hoisted by your own petard, if you will, I'd rather he not, because I'd rather no one got caned.
Yeah, and even when you are hoisted by your own petard, that's still an explosion and you still get hurt.
Yeah.
Well, and what it comes down to here is Aceh province, in Indonesia being highly strictly Muslim, it's one of the places where not only is the accusation of homosexual relations warrant caning under their particular laws, it's one of the places where you can have mobs, death mobs, come after you for even just suspected homosexuality. And it's one of those places where you can have LGBTQ folks that are legitimately persecuted and have legitimate asylum claims to the U.S. And those are folks that are right now being stuck on one side of our borders, awaiting until they have hearings to see, is your asylum claim real or not?
Right.
You know, when we look at the border crisis and immigration, it's not just affecting, you know, individuals from Central and South America. We have people from all over the world that are now stuck on in camps along the southern border with Mexico, the northern Mexican border to the U.S. And to say, yeah, we could say, ha ha, this delicious irony. We have people that are being physically punished for expressing their affection. I mean, when right. we say, like, okay, you have an affair, you have a dalliance. Who's to even say that that's actually a crime? Who's to say that you know, this wasn't consensual on the part of everyone involved? You know, the person who was cheated on, apparently, or who was adulterated against. And then the
cuckolded, if you want to go with a nice old-timey term.
There you go. Or the two individuals who engaged in their particular illicit congress, right? Like, is this even something that should be on our radar, that should be outlawed? And we have traces of these things in the U.S. You can, in our military systems, be discharged dishonorably for the crime of adultery within our military. We have these traces. So it's easy to say, oh, look, it's Aceh province in Indonesia, and they have Sharia law. Isn't that terrible? We don't have that because we're so enlightened. No, you can be dishonorably discharged for a charge of adultery from the military.
And keep in mind, it's the sodomy laws in this country were not overturned until, was it 2001?
It was the Texas case
Lawrence v. Texas, and that was 2001. So it's like, we're not talking ancient history here when you could go to jail for being gay.
Good point, Dave. If you've got a question for atheists, then email us at questions@atheist.radio. Leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. Find us on Twitter at AskAnAtheistWA or Facebook at the same place. Our music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. Happy, I guess, start to the holiday season.
That no, red not until green. Not until after Thanksgiving.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Nick. We will see you guys next week.
Ask an Atheist After Dark.